Welcome to Quick Tips for Dads. My name is Randy. I'm your host today. And today, I've got a very special guest on, and I'm very excited to share this interview with all of you because I think it will be beneficial and bless a lot of lives. Today, my guest is a guy by the name of Matt Purcell. He is an international transactional lawyer who just so happened to teach a class at my law school where I met him and I became acquainted with him. He is a father of three and soon to be father of four, who talks about balancing life, balancing work, and balancing being the best father that he can be with the stressful, hectic schedule that comes with being an international transactional attorney. So please enjoy this interview with Matthew Purcell. Matt, thanks for being on with me today.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Yeah. So a little intro on you. You were my international business transactions teacher at University of Idaho. It's where we got to know each other. It was a fascinating class. I thoroughly enjoyed it and was really interested in your work and what you do. But I just kept feeling like there was something more to you than there met the eye. And then you talked about having kids and a family. And I was like, that's what's more. I need to interview this guy to see how he does it. So will you go ahead and introduce yourself? Who are you? How did you end up where you are? You know, tell us about your family, etc.
Absolutely. And thank you for those kind words. I enjoyed teaching the class. That was my first experience too. And we'll talk more about some of the balance that required. But yeah, I'm originally from Boise, Idaho. And went to school in Boise, went to college at Brigham Young University, served a two-year church mission for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints in Belgium and France.
Oh, cool.
Been a while now, 22 years ago.
Oh, man.
After that, contemporaneously with college, I served the mission, and then I went to law school at the College of William & Mary. As part of that time period of life, I got married, and we started a family. Had my oldest, McKenna, when I was at Brigham Young University. Had our second child, Lily, when I was at William & Mary. And then had my first couple of jobs out of law school on the East Coast of the U.S., so spent a little bit of time in Boston, spent a little time in upstate New York. And then after 12 years of being gone, I returned to Boise, back to my hometown, and I've been there since. I've been at private law firms, I've been at Micron, and I'm now at Simplot, where I'm a corporate counsel there and head up a team that handles all corporate and commercial transactions. The family, we added a third, I should have said, my son John, who we call Jack. He was born in Boston. And so I have three wonderful, amazing kids. Have a great relationship with each of them. And they never cease to amaze me and teach me. They're all three teenagers now. And that is quite a ride in and of itself. I am learning every day how to be a better dad. But I love it. My favorite part of life is being a dad. And that's been great. I should note that I had a bit of a curveball thrown my way a few years ago after being married for 17 years. My wife and I went through a divorce, and it was everything you would imagine it would be. It was heart-wrenching, required me to really dig deep and look inside myself and realize maybe where I needed to improve. But ultimately, we wanted very different things out of life, and so we moved on amicably. But last year I was remarried to Rebecca Buckley, and she's a landscape architect here in Boise. We actually grew up near each other. She had never been married, and we are expecting our first child in September. So I get to be a dad all over again.
Congratulations. That's exciting.
Thank you very much.
That's awesome. So you said you spent how much time on the East Coast then? You said 12 years or so?
7 years on the East Coast.
Okay. Right on. And did the cultures out in the East Coast, did that change the way you look at how your kids interact with you? Like, was there different I mean, I guess how do I ask this? Out on the East Coast, I just was thinking about this. It's a different demographic of people than, say, Boise. Did that influence your parenting style at all and how you balanced your work and your family?
It certainly influenced it. You're right. But maybe not in the ways I thought it would. So starting in law school, first of all, I was, you know, people looked at me like I had three heads. when I went to law school, it was a very traditional law school experience for most people, meaning they went straight from undergrad to law school. I was one of only a few that had kids. Mm-hmm. And so I had one child when I started law school, two by the time I ended it. I was pretty unique. And I treated law school like a job. And so I'd go in early, I'd go to my classes, I would study, and I came home every day at 5 p.m. And I really never studied or spent time on the evenings or weekends with law school or my studies, except as it got close to finals, you know, I would gear up in the evenings and on Saturdays. But for the most part, I really tried to treat it like a job, so that I could have that time with my family. And that was a lot easier in law school, actually, than starting my career. So when we moved up to Boston and then over to New York, you just start getting pulled apart in so many different directions. And I wasn't great at it, to be honest. I was really trying to establish myself and my career. I had longer commutes than I have now. And I think I made a lot of mistakes, not intentionally ever. Mm-hmm. I was always my intention to be a great husband and father, but I probably at times got out of bounds. And I was always striving to regain that balance. And sometimes I'd do good and sometimes I would fail and I'd have to reprioritize. But particularly as a mergers and acquisitions lawyer, when you're on a deal, it's all encompassing. It's really hard to pull yourself away from it because so many people are depending on you, and it's nights and it's weekends and travel often. And so over the past 15 years of my career, I've gotten much better at balancing. But yeah, the East Coast, you're right. For a lot of people, obviously family was a priority, but they approached it differently than mm-hmm. I did. And it was expected for you to be at the office.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, you even watch like TV shows like Suits, for example. They show people having kids. It's a TV show about lawyers. I don't know if you've seen it. But they're there till midnight and like, oh, I got to get home to my wife and kids. I'm like thinking to myself, I hope that's an exaggeration.
Yeah, I mean, I can say that, you know, I usually probably wouldn't get home till around 7 or so. Uh-huh. When I was on a deal, there were all-nighters in the office. There were some really late nights getting home. I think one of my favorite stories is I was on a deal and didn't get home until maybe 12 or 1. And then I got up at 4 and I didn't want to wake anyone in the house up. So I got dressed in the dark and I got to the office. And at about 9 a.m., I looked down and I realized I had one brown shoe and one black shoe on. I just hadn't realized it, but yeah, there were those times. It was difficult to balance.
Yeah, I can imagine. So you said we'll get into the more structured questions here in a second. I'm just curious about your experience with mergers and acquisitions and this all encompassing thing. Are there any specific things that you learned that could help somebody that, say, maybe in law school or in undergraduate work or graduate program that is looking at, you know, I'm going to start my own business, I'm going to start a firm, I'm going to start somewhere. And I can see on the horizon, there's a lot coming at me that's going to require a lot of hours, a lot of whatever. Is there anything that you would see now that you can look back, hindsight's 2020, anything you're looking back that you say, I would do this different, and this different that could help anyone that's listening to this?
I mean, my advice would be you have to have a plan.
Okay.
And because the best of intentions often isn't good enough. I mean, you can say that your family is your greatest priority. You can say that it's my intention to come home at a certain time each night. But there are many careers that just don't allow for that. So have a plan and boundaries for how you're going to make it work. And I think I had really great intentions, but not a great plan. Okay. And as we all know, plans blow up.
Yeah.
But if you can stick to the plan, which is, listen, you know, if it's slower, I'm going to go home early. If it's a normal day, I'm going to get out of the office by whatever time that is, 5, 5:30, 6, 6:30, whatever time you've set. And then knowing that sometimes it's the grand balancing act and you're maybe going to have to stay late, yeah. But you make those as you make that an exception as opposed to the rule, so that your family knows that they are in fact your priority. And hopefully you have a supportive spouse that understands that, and kids that support you in your career. But I think I could have done a better job at having a definitive plan, knowing that when that plan blows up, I'll try as quickly as possible mm-hmm. to get back on it. But good intentions aren't enough.
I love that, because I've had some recently trying to get together with friends or get together with our in-laws or help them with different things and say, will you help me with this, you know, name X, Y, or Z? And it never happens because you never set a time to do it. And so all of a sudden it's a week later and the time has passed where they need help with it. And so I think that's a really good advice to just to think about, to make a plan. We did that my first year of law school. We had a baby during orientation of my first week of law school. I don't recommend that. So now I know what sleep deprivation is. I don't recommend having a baby the first week of law school, but that we had a plan for, we had to, because the home and the Zoom office were connected that whole first year. We were totally off campus that whole first year, completely over Zoom. And so the lines blurred so quickly, and my wife was like, I need help with the baby. I'm like, I'm in class right now. I can't come help with the baby.
Yeah, that's tough.
And so, I mean, I don't know if you could speak to that with, you know, I imagine your world changed a little bit with the pandemic and having to work from home. Did you get blurred lines with family and work where your office became your home and your home became your office?
It did to a certain degree, but by that time, my kids were all pretty self-sufficient.
Oh, okay.
Right. It wasn't so much, you've got diaper duty or this kid's crying or this one's throwing a tantrum. It was more so-and-so needs a ride to a friend's house or so-and-so mm-hmm. needs to do this, or needs help with that. And so it wasn't too bad for me. Also by that point, you know, I had my own house with the kids, so it was just me and the kids, and they all understood that when Dad was, you know, quote unquote at work, even though mm-hmm. I was at the kitchen table or in my room, or whatever, they were very respectful of it, so it wasn't too bad.
Okay, that's awesome, that's neat. Well, I guess let's jump into some of the questions I sent you previously that you kind of prepared for instead of me throwing curveballs at you here. Dealing with international transactions, how do you balance the need for travel with being home with your family? Because I imagine, especially pre-COVID, pre-Zoom, when Zoom, you know, the Zoom stock went to its peak, there was a lot of travel necessary, especially, I mean, 10 years ago, Zoom wasn't hardly even a thing, or Zoom may not have been. It was Skype or maybe FaceTime. And it was much less appropriate in the workplace, I guess. How did you balance that? Because as an international lawyer, I imagine you were around the world periodically, and just how did you balance that? How did you deal with that?
Well, it's a great question. And sometimes I balanced it well, and sometimes I didn't. I'll tell you that COVID has made it a lot easier because I don't travel near as much.
Interesting.
But early in my career, yeah, there was a fair amount of travel. When I was at Micron, I would typically a couple of times a year need to go to Asia for several weeks at a time, which was really difficult. Really difficult on a family. It's one thing to be gone for 3 or 4 days. It's another thing to be gone for 3 to 4 weeks.
Yeah, imagine.
You know, I don't know the best way to do that. I would obviously call home every day. I would check on the kids and my spouse. But it was really difficult. at first it seemed really glamorous, business travel. It becomes far less glamorous the more you do it. Even though you're staying in nice hotels, you're eating great food, and you know, you're maybe flying business class, maybe you're flying on the company plane, whatever it might be, it, that time away from family takes a toll on you. And I'm glad that that was one of the first questions that you had, because if you're in a job that requires a lot of travel, again, I think you've got to have a plan. So my plans have changed over time. One of them is, whenever possible, I bring one of my kids with me. And you'd say, can you do that? And I've made it work.
Awesome.
Just last week I was in Nashville and I took my middle child, Lily, with me. And in the, we'd meet together for lunch. And in the evenings we'd go out to dinner and do a tour, and went to a concert even. And I've tried my best to involve my spouse and my kids recently in any of my travels. It requires a little bit more work, because you're buying a ticket for them and trying to make sure that you can sit by each other and all these things. But that one-on-one time is just, you know, critical. And I recognize that that doesn't work for everyone. I've got teenagers, so it does work. You probably can't take your 3 or 4 year old. But you know, people are incredibly supportive about it. They understand that I'm trying to be a dad and that I need that time with my family. But if it gets too heavy, you also have to reconsider things. So probably the primary reason I left Micron and went to Simplot is every other week I was traveling to San Jose Tuesday through Thursday.
Oh, wow.
That's where clients were. And, the travel was really easy. I could take one of the Micron planes. So time-wise, the commute wasn't too bad, but that wears on you. And I did that for about 2 years, and I was just missing way too much family time. And that's one of the regrets I have. And so when I noted that it was really becoming an issue, and no one told me it was becoming an issue, I just sensed it. And so I knew that I needed a different job, because that wasn't going away. So sometimes you maybe have to take drastic measures.
Yeah. And just kind of from your subtext that I'm just inferring here, it almost sounds like you want to be self-aware. You want to be aware enough to recognize when it's becoming a detriment to your family versus a benefit.
I think you're spot on, Randy. I don't think that takes a genius. No. I think if you're paying attention to relationships, then you start to sense when changes need to be made, or maybe when you've gotten out of balance.
Yeah, I like that. That's something I hadn't even thought of before. And it's interesting we talk about balance. One of my favorite analogies that I've heard with balancing work and school or in life and family is that of a 4-burner stove, and you have a limited amount of propane, right? And sometimes you have to burn the work burner really hot and the family burner can just simmer. But then when the work burner is off, you can burn the family burner hot and like be present where you are and be just there. And so I don't know if you've read the book Be Where Your Feet Are by Scott O'Neill. Scott O'Neill?
He's
the CEO of the 76ers. I highly recommend it. I listened to it on my commute into school, but he talks about being where your feet are and how if you're going to be at work, be 100% at work. Be at home, be 100% at home with your family. And that can benefit those relationships. So kind of what you were saying made me think of that with be where your feet are. And I really like that concept.
I think both of those metaphors are excellent. The 4-burner stove, I hadn't heard it that way, and I completely agree with it. And then your example of being where you need to be, wherever you are, be here now, I think is critical.
Yeah. And that's really changed the way I'm trying to think, because I'm bad at it, but I try and set my phone down, get away from social medias, everything, you know, the homework, the things I'm thinking about, just to be with my son, because my time with him is bath time every night. That is our dedicated sacred time. Is he loves playing, and we do bath time. We call grandma and grandpa sometimes. But that is like our sacred time. And so I think that's our plan. We didn't even realize we had a plan. So
I love that. And I love that example. I mean, and I loved how the word you used, which I don't think you use lightly, which is sacred.
Yeah.
And there are some things that are non-negotiables in life. And I think one of those is our relationships that we have. Mm-hmm. And fathers, those relationships are so critical. And I've learned that more and more, particularly with teenage daughters. And
we don't have that yet.
that time that I've invested with them through all these years is I'm starting to see the payoff and the dividends as we have very real conversations. We don't always agree on things, but we love each other and that relationship is there, and we can actually listen to each other.
That's awesome. And I imagine taking your kids with you has become some of those sacred times for you where you get to just hang out one-on-one with your son or daughter.
Yeah, that's awesome. Exactly right.
That's awesome. Well, thank you for sharing that. That's super valuable. So you said you had a family as a law student. I didn't realize this when I, wrote the questions. Is there anything that you did that helped you, or that as you look back, you could have done differently that might help you? You talked about treating it as a job, leaving the school or wherever at, around 5 PM, whatever. Is there anything you did that could help other students there's a lot at the University of Idaho that have kids. I don't know if you realize that there's, especially the Boise campus, there is, I would say, close to a majority that are non-traditional students that are parents, have been married, that is second career. I mean, I'm second career and a parent, so I'm super non-traditional. I don't know if you've got any advice for those people doing school.
Hang in there. It's tough. I mean, I admire, each of you, for taking the path that you took. It's because it's not an easy one, but I think it's possible. And again, everyone's situation may be different. My plan may differ from your plan, but as mm-hmm. we've already talked about, you got to have a plan.
Yeah.
You have to be really conscious and deliberate about what you're going to do. And, I think two things. The first is you've got to budget in time to be a father and a husband. The second is the happier you are, the better father you will be. If you are wired so tight and you don't have time for any hobbies and you don't have any time to relax and to de-stress, you're not going to be a very good father. And so it may require you to take your kids along with you on your hobbies. And we can talk a little bit more about that later.
Uh-huh.
But friends, outlets, hobbies, those are critical to your balance, mm-hmm. right? Because if it's just school and it's just kids, it could get really hard. You're going to burn out. And so obviously you're not going to have as much time for hobbies as you'll ever want, but having outlets, I think, is important. And I think it's important for your kids to see that you're balanced as well. You're not just a one-dimensional or two-dimensional father. You're a loving spouse. You're a loving father. You're a great law student. You have friends. You have interests and activities and hobbies. I think all of that is important for your kids to see you as a real person.
Yeah, I like that a lot, because that's something I've thought about with law school, because every law student comes in with aspirations of being a top 10% law student. And I've talked to a few other guys that are dads, particularly, because those are who we're drawn to, people like us. And we all had, I want to be the top dog. I want to be a great student. And then we realized after our first year, it's like, I'd rather keep my marriage intact and have a happy family. I mean, I don't know if you know this. I've already seen four or five different couples be divorced through law school, just because of the stress. Maybe not totally because of the stress of law school, but that happens. And I'd rather be an average student and an awesome father than the reverse.
I like what you said there. Obviously, whenever you hear about a divorce, your heart breaks, because that's mm-hmm. a trap. And as much as I don't want to agree with you, I do agree with you in the sense of I would like to think that I can do both, that I can be mm-hmm. an excellent employee or an excellent law student and an excellent, you know, husband and father. But the reality of it is something's probably going to give at some point. And if something's probably going to give, I'd much rather have it be that particular grade than that particular relationship. And so, I mean, I had to make the same call as well. I did my absolute best in law school. I finished well, but not in the top 10%. Yeah. And I understood that that was the trade-off. I was going to go home at 5 o'clock and I was going to do dinner and be with my family, understanding that that was probably going to cost me something in my grades.
Yep. Yeah. And, but I think that's okay. Like, as long as your priorities are, I mean, your priorities are aligning with your ideals, then I think it's okay. Because I think that's where people get out of whack, is their priorities are not matching what they claim to be wanting. So for example, my priority is my family, but I see them for 10 minutes a day because I'm studying. Your output doesn't match your ideal. And so,
well, and what I saw in law school, I don't know if this is still the case, but when I was in law school, there was a lot of wasted time among the law students as well. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, maybe I could have been a little bit more social. I mean, I certainly had a good friend network, but when I was at school, my focus was on getting it done. And so mm-hmm. I think there's probably study habits, study smarter, study more efficiently. When people are just kind of wandering around the law school library and talking with others, then going back to their studies and then talking with someone else and then on their phone, social media, mm-hmm. and then reading ESPN.com, you know, that's it. Yeah, you could be at the law school forever.
That's true.
And so at some point you have to discipline yourself and say, okay, I've got this 3-hour block in the afternoon and I'm going to hammer it out so that I can go home and relax. Because I do think that is a problem where it takes people longer than it should.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that. And I mean, that goes kind of back to the be where your feet are, is, are you being intentional about what you're doing at the present moment? So I like that. So next up, as an attorney, so we're switching gears, no longer a student. You've probably got a lot of people pulling you in different directions. How do you prioritize those demands between your boss, your other managers, supervisors, your subordinates, your family? How do you prioritize those time demands?
It is so hard. when you do good work at a law firm, at a company, the reward for that good work is more work.
That's accurate.
It's like, you know, you're competing in a pie eating contest and you win and the reward is more pie. And it is really a delicate balance. I don't know if you've seen the movie or musical Fiddler on the Roof.
It's been a minute, but yeah.
But Tevye has the line, you know, I'm trying to screech out a beautiful tune without breaking my neck, because he feels like he is a fiddler on the roof. Mm. And so you have to impress the partners at the law firm. You have to impress the boss at the company. And at the same time, you have to be able to walk away at some point. And that occasionally becomes some difficult conversations. I think most people understand, and I think people are getting better at understanding that balance is critical in life. But I struggled with it because I would, you know, maybe do well on a project, and the next thing I know, I have 3 more partners in my office asking me to work on a deal. Mm. And your inclination, of course, because we're all wanting to succeed, we're all trying to be successful attorneys, your inclination is to always say yes. But in doing so, you just bury yourself. And so mm-hmm. you have to learn at some point to politely say no. And it's not just in work. You'll be asked to be on boards. You'll be asked to participate in various charities. These are all good things, but you have to choose the better part. Mm-hmm. And at some point that means you can't do it all, even as much as you want to. So for example, I was asked by Wendy Kuchar to teach a law school class. It came at the right time in my life. it was a subject that I was familiar with. And so after talking with my spouse and my boss, I decided I would take it. It was difficult balance. There was a lot of evenings spent going through the textbook and preparing, but I was grateful I had the experience. Well, Wendy Kutcher came back and said, how about you teach another class this fall? UCC2 sales. How about that? And I sat down with my spouse and said, there's no way I can do this. I would love to. I actually really enjoyed the students at University of Idaho. I thought I was so impressed by the level of engagement and thought that they, including you, put into the lessons. So I was wanting to do it again, but I just can't do it. Between my job, which is really, really burdensome right now, having a baby in September, three teenagers, other service opportunities through my church and elsewhere, I knew I can't do it. So yeah. I told her I would love to, but it's not a good time.
Yeah. Well, I think that's an important lesson just in life in general, is setting appropriate boundaries, setting healthy boundaries, because there will be those people that take advantage of us. And Wendy Kutcher would never do that. Like, she would never. But other times bosses may not understand that you've got all these other things happening. And so setting those appropriate boundaries is important. And it goes right back to the kind of being self-aware and understanding how much can I take on and what should I say yes to? So,
well, I always say I can do 5 things really well. I can do 10 things semi well, and I can do 20 things really poorly. And so you're right. It's self-awareness.
Yeah. I like that. And my brother-in-law did an MBA, and he said that the best thing he learned there was to say no, that's the best thing he learned in all of his MBA was just to say no when you know it's not going to work out. So I thought that was an interesting point. So, and you mentioned you serve in some church assignments and other non-profession related, volunteer opportunities or boards or other things. How do you prioritize those things when it comes to family, work, things? You say you do 5 things well. I imagine that's more than 5 things once some of it jumps in. How do you prioritize church obligations and other volunteer type things?
Yeah, church obligations, that's an important one for me, because together with my family, that's my biggest priority. And so I've made certain promises there that that I take seriously, but I have to be smart about it. And so recently I was asked to serve in a capacity that requires a fair amount of my time. If I'm honest, I wasn't thrilled about it. I knew that I would further be stretched. I was going to be stretched further. So I had a very sincere conversation with my ecclesiastical leader about it. No different than the conversation I have with my boss at work, which is, I said, listen, I'm pleased that you've asked me to do this, and I will do it to the best of my ability. But here's what you got. You know, I've got Wednesday evenings, I've got Thursday evenings, and I've got a few hours on Sunday. And that's the time you have me, because I have other commitments during those other times, various things, whether it's work or family or whatever else. And I said, I'm not just going to hang around looking for things to do. I'm going to be very deliberate about my assignments. And he said, absolutely, I get it. Yeah, he understands my situation right now. Mm-hmm. And so he's been very respectful of those boundaries, that exactly what you just said. And so you have to establish those even in your important relationships, even within your family. Mm-hmm. There are certain boundaries you have to set. Now, I am always accessible. I think this is one of the questions you're going to ask me. I'm going to jump ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
My family knows that they can always get me at work. They can text me, they can call me, I'll step out of a meeting, but they also know not to abuse it. Mm-hmm. So I talk with each of my kids when they get out of school every day. My two girls who are driving home from high school, they call me every day, and or I call them. And if I don't call them, I get an angry text saying, "Dad, you didn't call." So we talk for no more than 10 minutes, check on them. How was their day? Have a great conversation. My son rides his bike, talk with him. And then if something really important comes up, they know they can reach me. Other than that, they know that I'm at work. Mm-hmm. Same thing with my spouse. She knows that if she calls or texts, I'll drop everything as quickly as I can and I'll get back to her. But there are those boundaries in that respect. And so in anything in life, it keeps going back to what you just said, which is you got to be here now, wherever you are.
I like that. We did that to my mom. Every day we'd call her. She worked. She was a working mom. But we had two parents that worked just because they enjoyed working. They didn't need us. We didn't need them as much at home because we were teenagers and stuff. But I think it meant a lot to my mom that we called her every day. But it also meant a lot to us to know that we could call her every day. Just right. We got home from school. Hi, Mom. I'm home from school. Safe and sound. Whatever. Had a good day. Like, took 5 minutes. It meant the world. And even through a lot of college before I got married, I would call my mom as I was walking to my car. Hey, Mom, how's it going? Just saying hi. I imagine it means a lot to you as well as a parent to have your kid recognize and want to chat with you and be with you.
Oh, it means the world. My wife reminds me all the time. She says, Pat, there's not a lot of teenage girls who really want to talk to their dad. And so she said, just remember that. And that means the world to me because, you know, sometimes I might even get off the phone with them and admittedly I'll roll my eyes because, you know, their concerns sometimes are so far apart from my concerns. Uh-huh. And, you know, I don't necessarily care, you know, when Harry Styles' new album is going to drop or some of these things that are so important to them, but I'm glad that they want to talk to me about those things.
Yeah. That's awesome. That's really neat. I think that's just a wonderful thing to have that type of relationship and keep that even through the teenage years. So good work. jumping right on here. You talked about this, how accessible you are. What do you do to decompress after particularly stressful days, events, times, periods, months? I don't know. What do you do to compress? Decompress, excuse me.
I have my outlets. One of them is exercise. Another one is reading. Okay. And so after a really hard day, first of all, to try to prevent those really hard days, I try to do my exercise in the morning. Mm-hmm. But there have been times where my greatest runs, my greatest mountain bike rides have been after a really tough day, because I've got to let off a ton of steam. I'm letting some people get to me or what have you. But, you know, sometimes if, you know, on a rare occasion, we just don't have that much time for media at this point in our lives. But after a really hard day, my wife and I, you know, we'll just watch a movie.
Yeah.
Just to relax and not have to think about something. But for me, it's exercise and reading. There's always, I love the four seasons of Boise because there's always a sport going on. Mm-hmm. My daughter Lily and I ski together. And again, we have had some of the most profound conversations on the chairlift. Hmm. That one-on-one time where we can just talk. For my son, Jack, we hike together. And that's what we like to do. And so right now we have a goal to hike Table Mountain and the Teton. So we're doing lots of training hikes this summer. I bring my daughter Lily mountain biking with me. You can tell she's kind of the athletic one. And so it's exercise. It's reading. I really like to read historical biographies. And then sometimes you just need an Office episode or a movie to just, you know, get out of it.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's something I found early on in law school is that if I didn't work out in the morning, my whole day was going to be more difficult. And actually, after my first year of law school, starting in January of that first year, since then, I've shed almost 40 pounds.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, just started getting active again because I used to be active. I played hockey growing up, played lacrosse in college, and then got married, started an accounting gig where they fed us every day. And had a a room full of snacks and sodas whenever we wanted it, and it wasn't too long before I put on an extra 30 pounds that I didn't want. And
yeah, I've been there. Yeah, we've all been there in our careers. And you know, okay, so I've got a funny story for you.
Yeah, let's hear it.
My favorite partner I've ever worked with was a woman named Kathy Kamen Ryan. Mm-hmm. And I worked with her in New York. And when the managing partner of the firm came and said, she's looking for an associate and I want to talk to you about working with her, I thought, why in the heck is the managing partner in my office? I'm some lowly junior associate. And I realized it's because no other associates would work with her. And so everyone basically said, good luck, Matt. And we became some of the best friends. And she was an older partner. She had made her bones through the 70s and 80s and 90s when, you know, female corporate attorneys were few and far between. Mm-hmm. And she made it because she was smart, because she was a fighter, because she stuck with all the, you know, she made it through all of the probably terrible comments that she got and everything else. And she was very successful and she respected me and I respected her. So that tees up for this story. So sorry for the background.
No, you're good. But
there was one day where I was complaining how I had put on some weight, and she slapped her desk and yelled an expletive. She had a sailor's mouth, and she said, "Your kids don't care if you're 5 or 10 pounds overweight. They want dad to take them to get an ice cream cone." And she said, "When you're my age and you're in your 60s and your kids are grown up, then you can go hit the gym for multiple hours a day and get healthy again." Now, she obviously wasn't advocating for a sedentary lifestyle for me, but she was basically saying, listen, now is not the time to worry about whether your pants got a little bit tight. Now is the time to be with your kids. Now that my kids are a little bit older and they're teenagers, I have a little bit more flexibility in working out. But I still don't want to take time away from them. And so, as probably the same thing with you, Randy, probably the same thing with a lot of your listeners. If you're going to work out, you're going to be getting up really early.
Yep. 4:30.
Yeah. All right. You're even better than me.
It usually ends up about 5:30, but I'd shoot for 4:30.
Yeah. So sometime between 5 and 5:30, I get up and I get my exercise in and I feel good. And we lose a little bit of sleep, but I think we're better dads because of it.
Yeah. And I totally agree with that, because it's been such an interesting thing to try and put in the workout before my son gets up, and then I'm with him when he's up. And so he's almost 2 now. He'll turn 2 in August, and it's so sweet. Every morning I'll come in and say, "Hi, bud." His daddy. And then he'll say, "Mommy, Jim." Yep. "Mommy's at the gym." And to me, that's the greatest thing you can feel, is that from your kid. So it's worth, you know, getting maybe 6 hours of sleep, but having that relationship with my son. And I read an article one time from The Art of Manliness. I don't know if you've ever read any of their stuff.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
Brett McKay. He wrote an article about how there's a biological bond between a mom and a baby, but the dad has to choose to be the parent and the best friend to the child, and has to work on that bond I mean, there is a biological bond, obviously, but that we didn't carry that baby inside of us for 9 months. And so the dad has to choose to be the dad and to be there. And there's something special about that. And so I think of that almost every day, that I want to choose to be the dad for my kid, because that's who he needs.
I love that. And you're also, you know, you and your wife are doing a great job of showing your son that it's important to be physically active, that health, you are choosing to live a healthy life. Even if that means a half an hour less with him, you're showing by example that's worthwhile in life.
Yeah. And that example, I mean, he already knows it. Mama Jim, Daddy Jim. Whenever we're not in the morning, if we're not home, it's Mama Jim, Daddy Jim. So, or Mama Shower, Daddy Shower, depends on what stage of the morning we're in.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. I think we got a few more questions to We talked about hobbies, leisure. We talked kind of about, this is an interesting one. What are your thoughts on homeschooling versus public schooling? Because this is kind of a hot topic right now with the politics involved, and you don't have to get into any politics. Just, I'm curious if you think they're, what the values are to each or what the detriments are to each.
All right. So this is where I'll be a little bit comical, not intentionally, but I'm going to be totally honest with you on this question.
Okay.
All right. So growing up, I thought the homeschool kids were kind of weird. You know, growing up in the 80s and 90s, I think homeschooling was far less common. Mm-hmm. And the ones that were homeschooled always just seemed a little off to me. You know, they talked a little different. They act a little different. You know, and it's probably because, my gosh, they were probably way more confident because they hadn't been like bullied, you know, throughout their school years, like all of us were, at various points. They weren't exposed to the horrific things on school buses. With that same partner I talked about, Kathy Kamen Ryan, she only referred to the school buses as the great equalizer. She said, Matt, it doesn't matter what you taught your kids. Once they get on that school bus, they're going to learn anything, you know, everything anyway. But,
it's accurate.
My thoughts have evolved over time, particularly over the past several years. And in fact, I'm actually quite supportive of it with certain conditions. The first is you've got to have a parent or parents who are fully engaged in it, who have the time, who have the expertise, who have the patience, who have the skill set to be that teacher. Just sending a kid online to learn everything, I'm not so sure that's the right approach. My kids during COVID and online, oh gosh, it was terrible. You know, it was really hard for them. They're very much engaged learners. Mm-hmm. So when I hear about, you know, homeschool, quote unquote, I worry that what they really mean to say is they're just on a computer learning, and that makes me a little bit more worried. But if you've got an engaged parent or parents who can do it, if you have the right teaching curriculum and you can mix in time with other homeschool families or have them participate in sports or music at the school, then I'm fully supportive of it. I've really seen some families that have done it really well. Now, for me and my former spouse and now current spouse, it wasn't on the table. My kids have done, they've done very well in public school, notwithstanding the complete awfulness that sometimes takes place there in terms of what they're subjected to, not from the teachers. The teachers have been almost universally fantastic. The school's good. You know, other kids can be really, really mean.
Yeah.
So I say that, but, you know, strong trees grow with strong wind. And so at the same time, I sometimes worry that if we try to put too much safety around our kids and never expose them to anything, that at some point life's gonna, you know, is gonna blow them over. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I don't think there's a right and a wrong. I think it's every parent's decision for themselves. But my wife and I have talked about homeschooling our son when he gets at that age, who's not born yet, but once he's of that age, we may try to do that, because my thinking has definitely evolved over time.
Yeah. And I think it's valuable to recognize it's a case by case thing. It's not a one size fits all answer. Cause I used to think very much the same thing as you did when I was in high school, about 13 years ago now. The guys that were homeschool were a little different. Like you said, they may have just been more confident in themselves than we were, because they were willing to do the weird thing because they weren't getting bullied. You know, the stuff I wish I would have done that I was afraid to do because I was afraid of Joe Schmo over there that was going to come and make fun of me. But yeah, my thoughts have evolved as well, as I've seen it with my in-laws, my brother-in-law and sister-in-law. They have 6 kids. And I can't imagine. And they decided to homeschool. They felt strongly like they should, and they brought them into homeschooling, and it turned out to be the greatest thing their family could have done for their kids. because a year later they found out two of their older boys were diagnosed with autism that they didn't realize because they're extraordinarily brilliant kids. Like they were reading novels at 10 years old. Like, wow. And so you wouldn't have thought like, oh, they're, you know, struggle with this, but their behavior and things like that, manifested in ways that, manifest with autism and some other mental differences. I don't want to call them a disability because it's not, it's just, they're just different. They're wired differently, but it turned out to be a humongous blessing for them because their kids don't have to miss school. Now they had another daughter have some other issues with her stomach and she didn't have to miss 6 weeks of school to get it sorted out because she's at home. So yeah, my thoughts also have evolved on that. And I think the public school system has its place, but it's individualized. I really like that analysis, I guess I should say, from you. So I appreciate that. Well, we're kind of on to our last couple of questions, and these are my favorite questions of every interview that I do. The first one has to deal with any advice you could leave, and then what does it mean for you to be successful? So we'll just start with the first one is, imagine you're gone, and you, for whatever reason, can only leave one piece of advice to your kids, written down, verbal, whatever. What is that one piece of advice that you're giving to your kids as you move on with to whatever, to the unknown?
So succinctly, I would say, be true to your beliefs and to yourself. Now for some context around that. One of my favorite things is reading books about people overcoming really difficult circumstances. Mm-hmm. A lot of explorers, a lot of people throughout history. And I noticed that there's a common theme, and they have a fixed destination or a fixed point that they're trying to get to, and they stick to it. And I think in today's world, there is so much confusion. There is so much noise. There are so many different paths that can be overwhelming to adults and to children. And so if I'm talking to my kids and I'm gone, I would say, be true to your beliefs and yourself. You know, find a fixed point, a North Star in your life, and follow that. And don't deviate from it. Yep, you're going to stumble, you're going to fall. You might lose that path for a little bit, but get right back on and keep on going. And don't let someone else tell you that you're on the wrong path, because you have to choose, and you have to live with either the blessings or the consequences of that. And so that would be what I would tell them, because their path may not even be the path that I would choose for them, but they need to figure out their path, their North Star, and stick to it.
I love that. Have you ever read the book? You may like this book, The Endurance, the Ernest Shackleton story.
One of my favorites.
Oh my goodness. And I mean, he had that North Star. He was getting those men home alive. And for listeners who don't know, he traversed Antarctica after his ship was crushed early on in his voyage, and not a single member of his crew died. And they were stranded for, I want to say, like over a year, wasn't it? Like 18 months or something like that, in Antarctica, lived on whale blubber, or not even whale, seal meat and other things that they could find.
Penguins,
yeah. And he had like his determination to reach that goal. That's a great example. Thank you for that. That's great advice.
So to follow up on your Ernest Shackleton statement. So recently my family and I, for spring break, we went to England. Mm-hmm. Actually showed some slides of some pictures. Uh-huh. I was teaching. And so on Sunday, we attended church services at the LDS Church House, which is right by Hyde Park.
Okay.
And just across the street from it is a statue to Sir Ernest Shackleton.
Oh wow.
And so it was actually neat for me. It was a bizarrely like kind of emotional moment for me to see this statue of Sir Ernest Shackleton. And then at the National Maritime Museum in Greenwich, just outside of London, they actually have the James Caird, the boat that they took from what Elephant Island over to whatever island they were rescued, which is a tiny boat. And so just to think through that experience, again, they didn't have all the modern GPS technology, but they had a cartographer with them and he used his instruments. They found a fixed point and they went for it, right?
Yeah.
They went.
Yeah, it's an unbelievable story. It just, that fixed point, it's so true. All right, last question. You ready for this one? You're at the end of your life and you get to look back and evaluate what you've done and who you've become. As you look back, what would a successful life look to you, and how would you measure your success as a dad?
So let me, that's the two questions there, right? Is what would a successful life look like to me?
Yeah.
So let me hit that first.
Great.
I had a pretty neat moment several weeks back when I realized how full my life has been. And when I say the word full, I mean full. I have experienced so much that I just never thought I ever would. You know, from beautiful, healthy, amazing children, an incredible career, traveling around the world, hobbies, wonderful friends that have been with me for since high school, and new friends, conversations with strangers that are meaningful, the books that I've read, the movies that I've seen, the music that I like, the places I've been. I've just, a successful life to me is a full life. It's a life filled with purpose and meaning and deliberate actions and plan B's and plan C's and plan M's. Because life is not linear. It zigs and it zags and it throws you curveballs, and you just keep moving forward. And I've had to learn that lesson even in the past few years again. I never ever thought I would find myself a single dad.
Mm-hmm.
It was devastating. And I didn't know what to do other than to keep going forward, because I felt that I owed that to myself and to my kids, which is, okay, life didn't turn out like I thought it would.
Mm-hmm.
I've had so many amazing experiences, and yet here I am, and I feel like I'm on the precipice. I'm on a cliff, and I can go one of two ways. And so I decided to keep moving forward, and now my life is so full again. And so that to me is a successful life. It's full. It's full of relationships. It's full of purpose and meaning. And then the last question, how would I measure success as a dad? I think it's all about relationships. Do I have an honest and open and healthy relationship with my kids? Do I love and support them? It doesn't mean I always agree with them, but can I love them notwithstanding our differences? Can I see past those differences and see them for who they really are, their identity? And I think if I can do that and maintain that relationship, because they know my opinion on things, I share it with them freely.
Yeah, you're a lawyer. That's what your job is.
And so, if I teach, I counsel, I share my opinion. Most of the time they take it, sometimes they don't. But they know what that is. The key is, can I keep the relationship with them even when I feel like my opinion isn't as valued as maybe it should be?
Hmm. I love that. And I think it's interesting because your version of success is not determined on outcome of your children, but on your actions and your ability to work through those difficult times with them, rather than hoping they turn out like good people, but on what you can control. I think that's valuable.
Randy, you hit the nail on the head and maybe said it more articulately than I could, but we can only control what we can control. And I think that success to a happy life is an understanding of what you really control and what you don't. And I think the faster we can come to grips with that, the more meaningful our relationships become, because they're not outcome dependent, like you said.
Yeah. Oh, I love that answer. I've thought a lot about that for a while. Is my success isn't based on what my child does. It's how I act towards my child. And so that's what I'm trying to do better at. And I think we can all do better. So I really appreciate you being on, Matt. It's been a pleasure to chat with you today.
Thank you very much for having me. I think this is a wonderful podcast, and we are always learning. So thank you for the opportunity to provide my comments and to think more deeply about how I can improve.
Thank you again to Matt Purcell for being on with me today. It truly was a pleasure to chat with him and learn about his philosophy and how he balances being a dad. It's different for everybody, and I don't think any single situation is easier than anyone else's, but I admire Matt and his efforts to be the best dad that he can be in spite of the setbacks and challenges that he may have had in his life. Again, thank you for listening, and we will talk to you all next time. Peace.